Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Rahasia. Rahasia practiced as a general physician in Germany for 8 years before meeting Osho in 1980. Rahasia is now a spiritual teacher and author and has been conducting workshops worldwide for more than 33 years. I'm so happy to have Rahasia on the show and I hope you enjoy it. Rahasia, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you, Saran. I'm very good. Happy to talk to you.
To start, Rahasia, tell us a little bit about how you came across Osho.
How I came across Osho, it had a few detours. Basically, I was working in Germany in a very beautiful hospital as an anesthesiologist near the Bodensee. I don't know how you say that in English, this big lake in the southern Germany. They offered me a very good position with a contract of 5 years to be the head of the Department of Emergency Medicine. But then I felt this is too early for me. I want to travel. I don't want to be, I felt it like an imprisonment to say yes to a 5-year contract. So instead, I quit my job and I went with my girlfriend at the time to Ladakh, to India, to go mountain climbing, to go trekking. And then from Ladakh, we went to Nepal. So for 4 months, we were basically in the mountains. And then when the trekking season ended because of the rain, we ended up in Khajuraho in India, a very beautiful place where these tantric temples are. And there we met a couple, a German couple that had a book from Satyananda in German. It was called Ganz Entspannt im Hier und Jetzt. It's kind of a book, totally relaxed in the here and now. And they were leaving the next day. So Angelica, my partner and me, we were reading the whole night through reports from this Satyananda about Pune and Osho. And I was so fascinated. I said, if only half of it is true, I need to go there. So we actually, with a detour via Goa, we went to Pune. That's how it started. And I have to admit, at first, when we arrived, I actually wanted to leave immediately because I felt we are in the wrong place. There are all these people dressed in red and have a mala with their guru around their neck. And this is not my thing. I was more for freedom and not being conformed to any group. But then I was invited for the first discourse in the evening, and that just blew my mind completely. You can imagine, so the young arrogant doctor thinking he knows everything has all the judgments about all these people there. And then this guru comes on the stage and greets everyone very gracefully. And then he starts speaking. And when I heard him speak, it was the strangest experience because it felt like it is my heart speaking. It is what I knew to be true, but nobody ever said anything like that. So my heart was absolutely in ecstasy. And my mind was struggling like hell. So we didn't leave and we stayed there. And it took me 1 month to take sannyas. But that was the time that I needed to actually open up more and more and more and let go of my judgments. So that was my beginning with Osho.
Yeah, what's really interesting is that many people come to Osho almost accidentally. You are not planning to be there and to meet a guru. And then you enter the commune and you saw all these people dressed in the same way with the necklace of the guru. And then you were like, this is not my place. But then you had the encounter, you listened to Osho, you met Osho, and that changed everything, as if you were blown away and all of that just dropped. And then considering that you were medical trained, so probably very rational part of your mind, very developed, very, you know, scientifically oriented, and then, you know, you're just sitting at the feet of an enlightened master in India. So these are the things that I feel like, for people listening who have not met Osho, I feel like it's valuable testimony of the impact of this man that had on people who just came across him even accidentally.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, over the days and weeks I was there, there were so many amazing situations. I remember, you know, it was the second or the third evening. Every evening there was, in Buddha Hall, the music group. You can imagine 3,000 people singing from their heart. And I found myself sitting by the side of Buddha Hall crying, being so touched. I couldn't believe I thought I arrived in paradise. I mean, it was not always a very so blissful, but mainly I had such an amazing time there.
Well, I see the picture of the sannyasins, especially in Pune One in early mid-70s. So by the time, I guess, you were there. And these people look absolutely in ecstasy. Like, they are the happiest people I've ever seen in my life. And it's so striking. And, you know, and then when they talk like you about the time, there is this kind of, yeah, many people report and say it was like being in paradise.
Yeah. And India is such a strange and different country. I have been in India before that time. The first time I went to India was in 1971 with a Volkswagen bus from Munich. I was driving with three friends all the way to Bombay and back. But at that time, I didn't know about Osho. So India in itself is kind of what an amazing country. And then this strange situation where so many people gather around a master. We were so happy. It's very hard to describe, actually, the first months I had in Pune.
Okay, that's wonderful. So let's jump to the main topic of today's episode, which is around therapy and meditation, because I know that you conduct a variety of workshops and retreats, and obviously you have a background as a general physician and doctor. And I think you conduct workshops from Tantra to life mastery, all the way to even business coaching. So I'm curious to know if did you design these programs yourself, or did Osho guide you in any way in designing these workshops?
The workshops I'm doing now, I designed myself, but they're of course very much inspired by what I experienced in Pune, you know, in the 10, basically, you may have heard, of course, of Pune 1 and Pune 2. So in Pune 1, I was from 1980 to 1981. In 81, Osho left. And then Pune 2, I was in Pune from 1986 to 1996. And there, I was basically in different departments. First, I started in the Center for Transformation, where we did all the kind of therapy like primal and sexual deconditioning and encounter and bioenergetics, very cathartic courses. So I participated, and then I was teaching them. And then later, I was invited into the School of Mysticism, which is a very, very different direction, you know, more exploring esoteric sciences. And again, I participated, and then I was teaching, and at the end, I was the director of the Osho School of Mysticism. Everything I learned was, of course, inspired by many fantastic teachers that I had that helped me. Then eventually, I was co-leading with quite a few of these teachers later the courses in Pune. When we left Pune in 1996, we went to Australia and started to build our house there. Then we started to kind of develop courses that are more for people who are not actually traveling to India and sitting at the feet of the master. The world is a very different place than an Osho commune. So we designed new courses that, of course, are inspired. For example, I'm teaching pretty much around the world the 7 doors to awaken consciousness, where for each 5 days we explore the life topics of one chakra and allow that to become a door to presence and to awaken consciousness and, yeah, awakening, if you like. So that was, of course, inspired by the esoteric sciences training that we were running in Pune, but I changed quite a bit of things. You know? And the Tantra course for couples, it's very similar to what we had developed in Pune. We were, I think, 13 couples that were meeting very regularly and exploring new ways of integrating our, you know, sexual meeting with meditation, and finding that lovemaking is actually a wonderful source for transformation. So I have been kind of together with my partner Nura, with whom I was together for 32 years until she unfortunately passed away quite quickly while we were guiding courses in Japan. We have been guiding this Tantra for a couples course for more than 20 years. It's still a highlight. That's where I'm going tomorrow to Bali to be for 2 weeks with couples.
Okay, well, that's great. So I just wanted to pick up on the School of Mysticism. You mentioned that you were at some point appointed director of the school and that you have gone quite deep into the esoteric science. And I'm always personally fascinated by definition, mysticism, esoteric, it's something mysterious and secretive. But I'm wondering if you can clarify a bit what was happening there and if Osho established the school and asked you to be the director.
The directorship that was after Osho had left the body. So basically, I was asked if I want to be the director because the former director, Madhud, he had left to America. That was kind of more in the flow. And the School of Mysticism, I mean, now you're asking me something that I have to go back into what we were playing with. We explored basically the energetic phenomena of being a human being on many different levels. So we explored energy reading, we explored the different energy bodies that are created through the different chakras. We explored channeling. I didn't do that, but Kavisha, the first founder of the Osho School of Mysticism, she did some channeling evenings, which were very beautiful. So we were playing a lot also with distant healing and with psychic surgery. And it was kind of an exploration time within the content of the human psyche. And, I mean, since 1999, my work shifted very much, because I'm not so much interested or focused on the content of the humanness, but on that background in which content is happening, which means awakened consciousness. So the focus has shifted very much. So I used to give energy readings and teach energy reading courses, but now I'm not so much interested anymore to do that. The danger I see is if you give a reading to somebody is that somebody believes you more than themselves. So it's very powerful if you tell somebody who they are. And ultimately, it's not who they are, because who they are is infinite consciousness. So that's my focus today. But at the time, we had a lot of fun with the esoteric playground. We shared a lot of darkness meditation and the mystery of the Essenes. I call that mysticism, but I wouldn't call myself now, maybe it's still written somewhere, but I wouldn't call myself a mystic anymore. I'm just kind of an ordinary guy.
Fair enough, fair enough. You know, you just mentioned dark meditation, which is probably the most powerful technique I've ever tried. It's amazing.
Yes. And
it's difficult to do it properly and to get the absolute dark pitch environment. So that's probably the only limitation, the reason why I don't do it more often. But it was incredible. And I'm curious to know, and I'm wondering, was this experimentation and playground with psychic reading, energy reading, and did Osho ask you, or it was just a natural happening of all the sannyasins living there and just experimenting with things?
Well, you know, Osho basically was the magnet for all sorts of therapists and teachers that from the West that were basically coming to the end of their wisdom because they were missing meditation. So the mysticism or the esoteric sciences was basically initiated by a very beautiful woman called Kavisha. She was one of the Hollywood people. I think she was married to some big guy in Hollywood. And she was very attracted to esoteric sciences. And then we had Vadud as a beautiful teacher who worked with her together. They basically created the school of mysticism, but, you know, Osho was very much supporting that. He was supporting everything. And then just so that it doesn't go too much into our head, when we just felt really, really great about the work we were doing, he was wonderfully cutting our head and said, you know, you guys, you are playing. Don't mistake your play with the serious work. I am doing work, and the work is meditation. You know, whenever our ego was kind of getting a little bit bigger than life, Osho was wonderfully cutting our heads so that we basically run all these courses under the main umbrella of meditation. And at the time, I was so fascinated by all the content that I didn't really found it so interesting to only meditate. But that has changed a lot. My focus was basically still on the content, not on the container. Now it's mainly on the container, on that which is aware of all experience. If that makes any sense to you.
It does make sense, and I think that brings up a point which I've noticed can be a little bit confusing in the world of Osho, because Osho was a revolutionary master and a contemporary master, and he experimented with the latest therapeutic approaches in the human potential movement to help especially Western people experience meditation. And also, as you just mentioned, he was encouraging different experimentations all the way up to esoteric and mysticism, etc. But what's your view in relation to this bold experiment and the combination of mysticism, energy work, therapy, and meditation?
Well, both is valuable. You know, people that we meet are on very, very different levels, and the personality is different. And the challenge always while working with people is to meet them where they are and then from there guide them towards who they truly are, which is pure awareness. So how to get there is very, very different for each person. I'm kind of very happy to have learned so many different ways or approaches to open the door for eventually to open the door for meditation. And these different approaches, they are helpful. The best way I can say it is, you know, we are in English at least, we are called a human being. So we are human and we are a being. And the being is that which is aware of our humanness. And our humanness has many, many, you know, challenges in your life, you know, in with relationship and with children and with work and with money and with job. So on that level, a lot of work can happen to improve the quality of life through therapy and through more awareness of how we function as a human being. Osho's emphasis was always, is today for me also, is, okay, this is the content, but in the content you can never be free. The true freedom is the awakening to that which is always here, not to that which comes and goes. And of course, everything in our humanness comes and goes. So it's like two wings of the same bird, the human being. Both wings are needed to fly. So in Pune at the time, I was more interested in all the content, believing that the once, for example, through when I was leading many, many primary groups, and I felt if only I have released and cleared all my own childhood issues, I will be free. But no, you will never be able to clear all your childhood issues because they're part of your blueprint also. No? So that is basically the limitation of working with content. But when you look at the world, of course, a lot of work with content is needed because it looks like more and more catastrophic if you look at the news at least. And on the other side, there's a lot of opening and awakening, but the news doesn't report that.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying that. And, you know, in my own personal experience, I've been through a similar journey where before coming to Osho, I was very much interested in philosophy and psychology. You know, I studied philosophy at uni and I was reading Freud's book and Jung and Assagioli, the psychosynthesis and all of that kind of, you know, the human potential movement. And what I have then coming to Osho, there was a lot of offering in terms of different therapeutic groups, which some of them were absolutely life transformative and very valuable. But I felt like at some point there was a risk of getting stuck in trying to clear up the past and heal the wounds and this and that, where at some point I realized, at least for me, I had to drop all of that and just concentrate on meditation. And I just started doing regular Dhanami, Kundalini, listening to Osho. And I have to say that where my life changed. You know, I had a shift in my consciousness. And what I see also in general in many of the approaches that are offered under the umbrella of Osho are too much concern and focus on the therapy rather than the meditation. I don't know if you share the same view.
Yes, I do share. Well, I wouldn't judge it. I would say the therapy is as much needed. Like you say, there is an end to it. It's one stepping stone. And Osho had a beautiful insight about this, you know. He said, well, you know, therapy is like preparing the ground, preparing, you know, pulling out the weeds and preparing the ground. And then meditation is sowing the seeds. Eventually awakening happens, if it happens, out of seed of meditation. So that is kind of the sequence. No? I can more say my own preference has changed. I don't feel I need to judge the friends who are still moving on with therapy. It is a valuable thing to do for humanity because there is so much unconsciousness and trauma and difficulties in people's lives. And yet, therapy is not the end. Meditation is definitely pointing you towards the unchanging, infinite awareness that we ultimately are.
Yeah, that's beautifully put. And I think, it's fair to say that, you know, personally, when I started, even though I was interested in meditation, I could hear Osho talking about enlightenment and state of awareness, but it wasn't my reality. I was so far away, and even now, I'm not saying not implying anything here, but what I'm saying is that for many people, I was coming from suffering. You know, I wanted a change because yes. I was in trouble. So meditation was a little bit too far away from me at the time. So therapy helped me to get to a point where I could then start to jump more into the meditation. But so perhaps, you know, what you're saying is that, you know, there is so much trauma around and so much suffering that sometimes you start from one way and then, but then it's important not to lose focus on the end, on the path that for me it's meditation, because therapy yes. doesn't go that far.
Yes. And eventually, you know, the big and most important quest was the question, who am I really? Who am I? What is this me? And of course, the meditation will, you know, eliminate everything that we are not. And what is left is undefinable. Nobody can say what it is, but I am that.
Well, that's wonderful, and thanks for going deep into this topic, which I think it's great to clarify for many people. And I wanted to ask you something, because you were a doctor. This is just a general question on what is health. There is so much talking nowadays about health and well-being, and the whole wellness industry is growing because so many people suffer and they have ailments, and the traditional medicine is struggling to catch up and give answers. You know, the drug therapy is failing, and you know, more and more people are getting sick and ill. So, with yes. considering your background as doctor and then as a person who has been with an enlightened master and has been meditating and is teaching meditation and different workshops, what do you think could be a definition of health, and what is health and wellness for you?
That's a very good question. Let me start with the absolute. That we are is never sick. But of course, this absolute has a body, and the body, you know, tends to have ailments and sicknesses, and we are more and more poisoning the planet, the rivers, the oceans, the pesticides in the fields. I mean, it's crazy if you look how self-destructive humanity has become in this regard, also how bodily sick. You know, I work sometimes in the big cities in China, like in Beijing or in Shanghai, and it's unbelievable. You know, you don't see the sky anymore. You can only stay inside the house on certain days because the pollution is so big. So there, health is not a state. Health is like a continuous flow of rejuvenation that, you know, just like life itself. Life is not a stagnant momentary state. It's like a river that keeps flowing. And for me, health is like supporting a healthy flow in whichever way is possible for you, which means enough movement, which means eating the right food, which means meditation, so that you are not so identified with your suffering. Because as we are identified with our suffering, we don't want to get rid of it, so that's very unhealthy. It may sound strange, you know, but many people get sick because it gives them a definition and a reason to exist. It may sound very harsh, but this is how the psyche works. Health is the absolute non-resistance to what is. And in the non-resistance to what is, the body, which is part of nature, has its own intrinsic capacities to fall back into harmony, at least to a certain extent. So true health is the absence of resistance, the absence of struggle, the absence of, for example, being against your body. Again, on the psychological level, there are so many addictions these days. One huge addiction, which is very concerning, is the addiction to mobile phones. I just read recently the average person looks at his mobile phone 300 times a day. That is crazy. That in itself, the vibrational field of the mobile phone also has impact on our energy system and can support sickness. So what is health? What is health? Health is kind of an ongoing flow of life that supports this humanness in the body. And then, of course, there's a bigger picture where we have, you could say, our karma or the blueprint of how our body functions, that, you know, we can only, you know, influence to a certain extent, not totally. But like I myself, my body is 68, but I feel very, very fit because I move every day. I eat where I can the right things. When I'm in China, I cannot, so I need to kind of detox out of China. And I meditate and pay attention to the energetic disturbances that I experience. And then wherever possible, I clear them. And this is through meditation. I still do dynamics sometimes. I still do kundalini sometimes, especially with groups. I sit every morning and every evening. That supports also a healthy body. So I cannot define it in one or two sentences. It's kind of a flow. Health is a flow that includes, you know, the body, the nutrition, the environment, the breathing, the presence. The moment, the more present we are, in a way, the more we are part of nature, which naturally is healthy. Does that make sense?
Well, that's probably the most beautiful answer I have ever heard about health. So it's really wonderful and resonates a lot with me. It's in my own personal experience. When I started to strive for health, I was concentrating on the therapy and then on the meditation. And then through trial and error, I discovered that unless you include the body and nutrition and the environment, and nowadays the digital detox and all the other addictions, it's not going to work. You know, we are very multi-level, complex beings, so all these different layers, they have to be taken into consideration. So I that's my personal story. I try to move, being physically active. I'm very, very, very careful about what I eat. I do at least 12-hour digital detox. I switch off the Wi-Fi at kind of 9 p.m. till 9 a.m. I don't touch any device. And then, you know, during the day I have to work, but I try to be conscious. You know, if I'm traveling on the underground, I'm not checking my telephone every 2 seconds. I just put it in the bag and leave it there. I have to, because otherwise, you know, health, it includes all of this. And just doing a little bit of meditation or retreat here and there, it's not enough to counteract all the negative effect of the environment and bad food and the pollution and all the rest. So, you know, thank you for that. It's wonderfully put. And then just in terms of the addiction, today is my first week without coffee for 7 days in a row. That was probably one of my few last addictions. I'm celebrating. It's not been easy, but I'm doing a coffee detox.
Very good.
Okay, Rahasia, so we're heading towards the end. I'm just wondering, what are your current projects? What are you up to?
Tomorrow I fly to Bali. We have a Tantra Alchemy for Couples course. That's the Tantra 1. Then we have 2 days break. Then we have Tantra 2, which is for couples who have done the Tantra 1. It's a deepening, which is very, very beautiful. And couples, you know, they find a very, very different and more loving way to be with each other and include their sexual energy that is the only energy we have for transformation. And then I fly to Korea and I'm doing the last course of the Seven Doors to Awaken Consciousness, which is the magenta ray, which is a chakra above the crown chakra. Then I fly to Malaysia And there I have a 5-day course that is connected to an interesting lady that is very esoteric. She does a lot of readings, and she invited me basically to help people to focus a little bit different on that which is aware. We call it the art of living. And then I go to China, to Shenzhen, and there I have the first part of a 3x5-day course. I don't even know how it's called. It's embarrassing. But anyway, it's the beginning of a longer training. So the first 3-5 days are kind of an introduction to my work. And that includes, of course, the art of counseling. And then I visit my new partner, and she's actually traveling with me most of the time because she's doing the Chinese translation. Her name is Udaya. I visit her in Taiwan. And then I'm back here in Australia. And in Australia in February, I have the Violet Ray course, which is the crown chakra, 5 days here in Australia. And I have every Friday evening an open satsang in my home where everybody is welcome. And that satsang, this is when I'm home, is broadcasted via Facebook Live. So if you want to have a look at it, it is, you can look into my Facebook page and watch the satsang from yesterday evening.
That's wonderful. I mean, it's incredible. And so where people can find you if they want to book a course with you or just know more about what you do or get in touch with you? Do you have a website in addition to your Facebook
page? Yeah, I have a website. The website is called livingunity.com. And if you type in rahasya.com, it will guide you to that website also.
Okay, wonderful. And I'll link the Facebook page as well as the website to the notes of the show. I've got 3 final questions for you. So when you are not traveling, so when you are in Australia, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
That depends on the season. Yeah, now we are at the end of winter into spring. So first thing is I sit in my bed. First thing I wake up, I sit and meditate. And then, if possible, if the weather allows, I go for a 1-hour lighthouse walk. It's basically the Byron Bay Lighthouse. It's a beautiful walk up and down. And then if the waves are right, I go surfing for half an hour or an hour. And then I'm basically ready to go to the office and work and or do something in the house. But this is how my day starts. And in the summer, if possible, I go surfing every morning for an hour.
Wow, now you make me envious. That's beautiful.
This is the advantage of living in such a beautiful place that has good waves and clear oceans and clear weather. So it's beautiful.
Yeah, that's right. So the second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
My favorite meditation is sitting silently, just sitting silently and watching. I mean, that's what I'm doing. And then the second favorite is Kundalini meditation, but I usually do it while I'm leading groups, so I don't do it at home. I have enough movement at home.
Yeah, thank you. So the last question is, you lived the Osho experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2018?
Osho is with me, in me, in pretty much everything. Everything that I share has Osho's color on it. So Osho is basically totally part of my life. In every moment, it used to be like a very clear presence where I even felt his physical energetic presence with me, but now it is more like a space. Osho is with me as a space, so Osho and the empty sky is one for me. So to call it anything, you know, that's why Osho took the name Osho, because it just means oceanic consciousness. Infinite, open, limitless, beginningless. endless, never born, never died. That is with me.
Oh, that's really very, very beautiful. So, Razia, thank you so much. That's the end of the show. It's been an absolute pleasure connecting with you, talking to you, and you shared so much value, so many interesting facts, and I just want to thank you really from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you, Sarah, and thank you for inviting me. And if I come to Hong Kong, I will visit you. Not Hong Kong, Singapore, sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you go all over Southeast Asia, so, you know, hopefully we'll find an opportunity to meet.
Yes.
That's great.
Very good. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Razia. Big hug and lots of love.
Thank you for listening to the Lavo Show podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit lavoshow.com for new episodes, blogs, and much more.